Welcome back to Tag Team, Pokemon Trading Card Games premier podcasting trio. My name is JW Kriwal, and I'm joined today by my good friend, Andrew Mahone. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm big chillin', man. Got to play some Pokemon cards over the weekend. You know, watch the results from the Utrecht special event roll in. And I'm gearing up for Vancouver, feeling good.
Yeah, you and Zeely had an all-day session.
We did on Sunday, so yesterday, because we're recording on Monday night, our new recording time. I do know. Really like this new recording time, I have to
say. It feels really nice. I mean, it's going to be hard when we start going to majors, but, you know, we can shift it to Tuesday. I don't think anyone would be that upset. But it is like a nice, like, beginning of the week. We're all very motivated. We're all very fresh of mind.
So, yes, I agree. Just had the day of rest. And and all of the big news comes in from the weekend, right? So it's still fresh, and we get to kind of recap
it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Immediately, which feels really good.
Yep. Jesse and I also did some post-rotation testing, by the way.
Yes, using the Limitless simulator, right?
Yeah, the Limitless has a, of course, they have their kind of solo single player tabletop sim. There's actually a hidden underground Limitless where you can create, it's essentially the tabletop, but for two players, you can create a room and then invite somebody to that room. And yeah, it was pretty nice. That was my first time really using the tool. I may have seen it, you know, a number of months ago, but it's my first time really using it. So worked out pretty well. I'm surprised that they don't push that product as like a main offering. Really?
Are you?
Oh,
are you?
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Are you surprised that they keep it? Yes.
For fear of getting shut down? Yeah, maybe. Yes. Maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think Robin and the Limitless guys, you know, probably like where they sit with the Pokemon company real nice right now and are just like not trying to ruffle any feathers, but they have this tool that you can use. And for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, basically Limitless has like a, I call it fish bowling when you're kind of just playing a game by yourself, right? And just kind of opening your opening hand, playing through a couple turns, maybe you'll, or shadow boxing, right? Like you're kind of just like, oh, I perform this attack. Oh, say my opponent knocks me out. Okay, then I'll recover this Pokemon and now I'll perform an attack. Oh, they knock me out, right? So basically they have a single player kind of shadow box simulator, you know, where you can start your opening hand and do things, but everything's manual, right? I mean, everything's manual. You're drawing your cards manual, discarding cards is manual, putting cards at different play areas is all manual. And they basically have a two-player version of that where both players are doing everything manually. But, I mean, playing cards in person's manual. So, like, not everything has to be automated for you to get the idea how the decks work.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's a great app. I've really enjoyed it. Again, not associated with the Pokemon company in any way. You know, not associated with Limitless, or I guess they are. But whatever. That's funny. So speaking of apps, though, I had just launched an app for Pokemon players, a new website for you guys out there called counterplay.gg. This is, we talk about a lot of big players that make spreadsheets and they run simulations on their spreadsheets, against their spreadsheets, against their predicted meta share, and, you know, come up with a deck that might be better into certain metagames based on their win rates and what they expect to see in the tournament. And so that was something that, you know, we had always kind of done. Certainly a lot of other players do this kind of data aggregation as well. And I wanted to kind of democratize that. So I built this application, so you can check it out over at counterplay.gg. It's a data aggregation and tournament simulation application. A lot of big words there, but you get the gist of it and kind of input your records. It does allow for the copy paste of PTCGL game logs. Of course, this is a future facing client, so for those getting ready for EUIC or Orlando regionals, everything's kind of set up for the post rotation format. But input your results, see your results, simulate tournaments with your results and your win rates, your matchup percentages. It's pretty fun. Launched it today. Head over like 250 logins. So
cool.
Feeling good about it. Yeah.
Cool, man. Yeah, that's awesome that you were able to, you know, kind of piece something together that could also be useful for the Pokemon community. I'll have to check it out because it just launched today. So I have not even seen it yet. So that's that is very exciting news.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. So it's been a fun little side project as I have a lot of time on my hands.
As you explore new employment opportunities.
Yeah, some would say. Some would say. As I suck off the government teat.
Or that.
Of unemployment, yeah.
Well, now you just have time to pursue your passion projects.
That is
maybe
true.
Maybe finish that book you said you were writing.
Dude, yeah, finish the book, absolutely. It's there. Yeah. It's pretty much all there. I just had to, like, format it, so.
For sure. So, yes, Zili came over yesterday, and we had a testing session where we got to, you know, kind of try out our decks for EUIC. I actually, most of my decks that I have built for content, right, are post-rotation. And so, like, my current rotation decks they're dwindling, right? I mean, they're almost all getting, like, hacked apart and turned into post-rotation decks. The current rotation decks, I mean, I have Mew together still. Right. I have Mew. And then a lot of my other, you know, post rotation decks, I could revert to pre rotation like very quickly, like Chen Pao Back's Excalibur, Giratina V Star, Charizard EX, all those decks, just I can revert those no problem. Take out the buddy buddies, put in some battle VIP passes. We're pretty square.
Yeah. right. Like, right.
But, you know, I've got all these post rotation decks that I've been, you know, doing on tabletop testing for stream and for content, and getting to actually kind of just chill at the house and play them. This is actually the first time that I've ever actually gotten to do that.
Oh, wow.
I've done a lot of playing them on camera, but not a lot of, like, you know, actual play testing, right? Where you're, like, constantly taking cards in and out and trying different things and playing very kind of, like, malleable games where you're, like, you know, you're talking about plays and talking about if, right. you know, what and the other. You know, more exploratory testing, I would say. When I'm creating the content on stream, it doesn't make sense to, like, stop games and try different things as much. You know what I mean? Like, you're not doing as much exploratory testing. I'm doing more performative testing, right? Where I'm showing off the strategies, and we're going to keep the game as like kind of rigid as possible so that people watching or just, like, kind of popping in aren't confused about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things could be much more flexible and when you're just testing, you know, kind of hanging out at the house. So that
totally,
was a lot of fun.
Totally.
And funny enough, I think we came to some similar conclusions about our just from our first kind of foray into.
Well, it hasn't been my first, actually. Like, I had tested with Jesse once before, and then we had decided to unpack the Pandora's box that is Stall. In the next format. That was what we did yesterday. And when you say we came to similar conclusions, I think the large conclusion that we came to from both of our separate testing sessions was that Stall is absolutely broken in the next format. And it's one of, I mean, it, I'd hate to be, you know, a harbinger of doom and gloom, but this is probably the strongest a Stall deck has been in my time playing. To my knowledge, you know, I mean, it just feels very much with the airy, horrible card, absolutely diabolical card.
And diabolical card, bro.
You have the Snorlaxes, you got the Countercatchers, you got all this stuff working in your favor. It just is looking really good for next format.
I was playing on TCG Live today, right, playing towards special box deck, which you know we're going to talk about a little bit as well, because my goodness, just what in the world is going on over there in Utrecht. But top fours with this, like, basically singleton standard deck, which is absolutely wild. But I was playing that and played against a bunch of Snorlax Stall decks on stream today, and they're doing things like Fang Snipe with Luxray V, and I'm like, how old fashioned. You know, you only get to discard one trainer. You have to get a Pokemon V into the active. Post rotation, you just get to do two items instantly, you know, with a Snorlax active. It's crazy.
It's evil. But we are going to talk a little bit more about post-rotation on the next podcast episode. Yes. So if you're really looking forward to that, you know, don't log off, don't sign off here, but you know, get ready for more of our takes, more of our because I know that you and Celie are really starting to ramp up. You, Celie, mm-hmm. Jesse, everybody that's going.
Jesse's coming really in to stream on Wednesday. We'll have more info to divulge.
Next week. Absolutely. And there's a lot that we already have, which is really fun. So, but we got to talk about the big Pokemon Day news. PTCG Pocket, they devoted a ton of time to Pokemon trading card game at the, I don't know, what was it? The Pokemon Day, you know,
presents
fan info session. Yeah. Pokemon Presents, right?
That's the name.
The YouTube, you know, video that they give out to, you know, make people salivate over their new offerings in the next year. And so PTCG Pocket was the big thing announced for the trading card game, which I feel like really rarely happens. The trading card game doesn't get a ton of airtime. Maybe it's like they're releasing a new card or a new mechanic, but we get a whole new game, PTCG Pocket.
Yes, it is wild. I mean, I've been talking about this quite a bit on stream. I did a little video essay on it last week where I kind of got to spell out some of my thoughts. But yeah, a 4-minute advertisement. I mean, the Pokemon Presents was about 12 minutes long, a third of it going to a trading card game announcement, something that has never been done before. And that's kind of wild because the Pokemon trading card game is a huge percentage of the profits that the Pokemon company makes. I mean, the Pokemon trading card game, when you have a trading card game as lucrative as the Pokemon trading card game, you're literally printing money. I mean, you're at the printing press, and it's as good as printing dollar bills. You are printing, you know, images onto cardboard, and people pay a lot of money for them. So it's just ridiculous. I mean, you think about the MSRP of a booster box, that is 36 packs of cards, is $150. That's MSRP, right?
That's not $150, is it?
Yes, it is. Like $160. Yes.
No.
They used to be $130. Yeah. Go to Pokemon. Go to PokemonCenter.com. Go to PokemonCenter.com and see what the booster boxes cost. That's MSRP. Yes. Now, we are used to the $100 booster box. That's what we've grown up with, right? The $100 booster box. But even during the time of the $100 booster box, the $90 booster box, whatever, MSRP was always about $120, $130.
Yeah.
But it's gone up in recent years.
$60. That is crazy.
Yeah. So, so they're literally printing money. But the Pokemon trading card game has never been something that they've devoted a lot of resources towards digitizing in any kind of way. They've kind of just allowed it to be its standalone tabletop card game, especially in Japan, certainly. And then and then the Pokemon Company International. It feels like the Pokemon Company Japan is kind of just relegated. You know, if you want to make some sort of like online, you know, kind of simulator to, you know, allow people who are not living in Japan to kind of simulate their games so that they can easily play together. Sure, TPCI, whatever. Do whatever you want with that. We don't really care. That's the kind of attitude that is kind of what it has seemed like from the Pokemon Company so far in regards to creating TCG games or whatever in a digital space. And, you know, we've seen lots of other very creative, very driven applications come out. I mean, you got Pokemon Masters EX, you got Pokemon Unite, you got Pokemon Go. I mean, just a lot of really cool stuff. You got the main series games developed by Game Freak, but then the TCG has always just kind of been a, you know,
hands off
the TCG.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. Well, I think what is very interesting about PTCG Pocket, and it's very curious to me, to be honest with you, but it's a reskin of the trading card game in the sense that it doesn't appear to be a one-to-one duplication of the trading card game. It seems like there's going to be more of a, you know, mana mechanic in that, you know, energy is not attached to Pokemon. It's you know, available for any Pokemon to use as you kind of build up over turns, maybe similar to a game like Hearthstone, if you have any knowledge of that, where just as the turn counters increase, you get more abilities to, you know, you spend on your creatures or your cards or whatever it is. So I think that to me is interesting. It looks like there's kind of a simplified version of the game. I'm a little bit kind of back and forth on that because on the one end, I'm, you know, a hardcore competitive player. So I want to see them do just a one-to-one recreation of what I know and love about the trading card game. But on the other hand, could this be a gateway for younger players or newer players or players that might be intimidated by the rule set of the Pokemon trading card game as it stands that might pick up PTCG Pocket, love it, and then have that translate into, oh yeah, I want to get more invested in Pokemon, you know, the trading card game, you know, the real trading card game, I guess. You know, does that have a conversion effect with PTCG Pocket?
Yes, and that is it, right. Is Pokemon Pocket kind of the gateway into the broader world of the Pokemon trading card game? Is that kind of what it's going to exist as, or is it just a cash grab, right, to mm-hmm. get people to scam people into buying digital cards that don't even exist and creating a digital collection? But isn't that just what all games are, right? I mean, like
all games are cash grabs. Yeah,
yeah, all games are cash grabs, right? I mean, like they're it's a business; they have to make money. Of course, this is what they're doing, right? But it's funny because I mean, Pokemon Go, really? I mean, it's a digital collecting app. There's some battling, right? And some people take the battling very seriously, but it kind of started off as like an augmented reality digital collecting app, and then you know they introduced PvP and there's people that take the PvP very seriously. There's people who don't, you know, but it exists within the game. But the vast majority of people who play Pokemon Go are there just doing the digital collecting, right? Even though there is kind of like a hyper-competitive kind of underbelly of people who do the competitive battling. And now they have events at, you know, TPCI regionals and stuff like that. But for Pokemon Pocket, it seems like it's in a similar vein as Pokemon Go. I'm kind of think of it, it's like a digital collecting app, right? Where you can kind of manage your digital collection. And then there's some battling that you could do too, because you need something to do, right? It can't,
yeah.
It can't just, what are you just going to like stare at your cards all day? Like, I mean, that's kind of my question to just people who just collect,
right?
Instead
right. Well,
of play.
I mean, it's a good,
you're just going to look
parallel.
At your binders all day.
It's a great parallel, right? To Pokemon Go.
Right.
Because that started off as just kind of collecting and then, okay, we introduced this battling and then you can kind of branch that out into like raid battles and boss battles and things like this. There's a lot of different variants that you can go with it. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you see it as just being limited to this kind of reskin of the Pokemon trading card game, this simplified reskin of the Pokemon trading card game when it comes to battling?
As in, so are you asking, do I see it as only existing as these kind of mini battles and never becoming more ambitious and tackling one-to-one parallels to standard and expanded things like that? Right.
Yeah.
And real life Pokemon yeah. TCG rules. I think that's a tough question. So let's, I mean, you can look around.
Cause I think it's answers. Obvious in my opinion, but go ahead.
Okay. You can look around for answers because there's Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links, right? Which is like the mobile app. And then you have Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel. Master Duel was released recently, hilariously enough, around the same time the Pokemon Trading Card Game Live was released. And boy, howdy, were those two releases, you know, just
wildly
vastly
different. In terms of hype. Yeah.
Hype,
in terms of
professionalism.
Polished
product. Yeah. Just everything, just night and day, right? And if we're not being clear enough, yes. Master Duel was wildly successful, garnered lots of hype and attention online, lots of viewership on Twitch, lots of viewership on YouTube, and lots of hype about the Yu-Gi-Oh! Game, and Pokemon Trading Card Game Live was the antithesis of that, and has never actually garnered any hype on any digital platform at all. In fact, we just have, I think, less concurrent viewership on Twitch and YouTube than we used to get with the Pokemon Trading Card Game Online. It has been a hit to the content sphere. So you have Master Duel, you have TCG Live, you have Duel Links. Apparently Duel Links came out like 7 years ago. So like Duel Links, this Yu-Gi-Oh! Mobile game, actually predates Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel. And then more recently you have Marvel Snap, which is kind of another quick Marvel-themed trading card game inspired battler, right? The games are are quick and snappy and addictive, right? And you you collect cards that, and the emphasis is on how beautiful the cards look and the characters on the cards and how cool they are to activate in battle, right? And and I actually pretty much refuse to play Marvel Snap, even though I think it looks really cool, because I don't want to get depressed about the game that I love, which is the Pokemon trading card game. So like, I just can't do it. It'll break my heart, right?
Yeah, it'll just break my heart.
Plus, there's only so many hours in a day. You know, you got to invest into the things that you invest into, and it's just like, I know playing a cool game like Marvel Snap just make me feel bad. So I'm gonna choose not to.
Back to teaching.
Yeah, well, like playing a cool game like Marvel Snap and then going to my job every day and playing TCG Live will just make me really hurt, so I'm Yikes. Just not gonna do it, right?
Yeah.
But I've seen people play Marvel Snap and boy, it looks fun. But I think that TCG Pocket, Pokemon TCG Pocket, seems like it's just a direct answer to Marvel Snap and Duel Links, and if I'm being realistic about it, I don't ever see them trying to emulate Standard or Expanded on Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket. I think it'll forever remain its own standalone experience where they can kind of just make their own rules, make their own cards, make their own mechanics. They could try things out and not really to ever worry about whether or not it's too broken or not. Right? They could just like, they could just try things. It is, right? Because it's the people who are behind the creation of the Pokemon trading card game. I feel like it's kind of like their little playground, exactly, mm-hmm. where they can kind of try out ideas and just mess around and just play in a digital space. But I don't think that they're worried about replicating Standard in the digital space. So what do you think?
I think that give it 5 years, it'll be the Pokemon trading card game, like, full offering.
Really?
Yeah, I
do. Okay, now what's your defense for that?
Well, my defense for that is, I mean, they've certainly had the conversation, right? They're not in the room. Like, the executives are not in the room, and they're not saying, like, well, you know, let's just, you know, create this side game, and you know, will we ever have Standard, Expanded, full offerings, you know, old cards, things like this? And that it's not like that question has not been asked by the executives, right? So my argument for the thought that they would have old formats, that they would include kind of a Standard, Expanded, you know, full offering, full package, is that there is expected to be this lineage of cards. I mean, they were talking about cards all the way back from, you know, the beginning of the trading card game. And I think if you're going to include, you know, the cards that make up Haymaker, there's really no reason, and, you know, even extending through to the modern day, right, there's no real reason that you wouldn't want to maybe try to preserve that kind of legacy in the original format of the way that you can play games. So I see this as, again, not now, maybe not in 3 years, maybe not in 5 years, but like in that 5 to 10 year range, yeah, I see them fully developing this game to be, you know, of course you have your, I don't know, your pocket level format, but then Standard, you know, or retro formats or other offerings.
I mean, God, I wish.
I think there's such a legacy with these cards that they want to highlight, and that's why you see the, you know, celebration sets. You see these reprints. You see old artwork being reused time and time again. Like, I think they really care about the lineage and the history of these cards. And so if there's a way that they can push these out to players to use, potentially even in the formats and kind of the constructs that they were meant to be used in, I think that conversation has been had. And I feel like they're just pushing out, you know, this limited reskin of the game just to see how things go, just to see if there's generating enough interest and if they generate enough money to devote to actually building out what they would want to build out, which is a full-fledged experience, ranging all the way back to retro formats. That's what I think the game designers would really like.
I mean, I dream of what you're pitching here. And in my video that I released, I say, you know, maybe there's in 10 years is my
yeah, sure.
pipe dream, right? Maybe in 10 years, after the program, after the app is successful, right, and generates income. And that's the thing, is if it generates enough income, then you have this, you have this cash cow.
It's
right?
Going to be like, a dunk. Okay, it's going to be a slam dunk as it is.
I think it's going to be. I think so too. Obviously it will be.
Yes.
Yes. So like it would be, it's foolish of them to have never done this in the first place. It would be foolish of them not to have ever done this, just to create something along the lines of exactly what they're creating now. That's part of what made me pull my hair out with the release of TCG Live as it was, because it's just like, what is everybody at the Pokemon Company doing? Why is this so bad? Don't you guys see how much of a slam dunk a digitized TCG, Pokemon TCG experience could be, right? And I do think it's smart to try and bridge the casual Pokemon fan into this. That's genius. You have to. If you create something too sweaty, it's going to be intimidating, and so on and so forth. And this has like the biggest potential to bring in collectors. You bring them in with the collecting. Then once they start collecting and they want more to do, they will inevitably learn how to play your game, right? Because they want to continue messing around on their phone. So they are going to learn how to do stuff with the cool cards that they like to look at.
Right.
And that's the kind of pipeline. I mean, I'm kind of thinking, you know, what if there was like little mini draft formats that you could play on TCG Pocket, right? You open five packs, you build a little deck out of them, you battle, you know, three times, and then you do some more, right? And that kind of stuff. I mean, there's the possibilities are endless, but I still don't think that they will ever try to replicate Standard and expand it. And I think that they have intentionally, I mean, look at the Pokemon Company's track record for wanting to replicate Standard and Expanded in a digitized platform. Not since Black and White have they ever wanted to do it. In fact, they have always kicked that responsibility to the Pokemon Company International and let them do whatever they want with it. For the first, you know, what, almost 10 plus years, they hired Direwolf to create a game. They let the game be run by these goofy 2D avatars that look like backyard baseball characters. Like, what in the world was going on over there? But eventually it started to kind of like look like a halfway decent, you know, TCG simulator. And then they shut it down, and then they let, you know, the Pokemon Company International do whatever they wanted with TCG Live, and they just never stepped in. I think if they ever wanted to take control of emulating Standard and Expanded, they would have put a stop to that and not let it get to this point. I just don't know why they would let them continue kind of like doing what they're doing if they had ever planned on stepping in and doing it themselves. But I see TCG Pocket as like its own standalone experience. And part of that is because I think in Japan in particular, they have a very strong tabletop gaming culture. And there is also a very strong video gaming culture. But in Japan, they do not want to do any damage to their very strong in-person tabletop gaming culture, especially in the Pokemon TCG sphere, and they aren't going to release anything to compete with what they got going on over there.
Yeah, I will concede. I think your argument is a little bit better, but I see this as being, from my perspective, when I initially saw the video, I was like, oh my gosh, the Pokemon Company is stepping in here, and this is their kind of entryway into like, okay, let's just test the waters, right? Let's see, first of all, because up to this point, we haven't had an application for the Pokemon trading card game that has done anything. Now, we both think that this is going to be a slam dunk. I foresee this being just financially extremely profitable. I see this being, raising the profile of the game, attracting a lot of new customers and clients. I mean, I think that this has unlimited potential just based on what they've shown us. That's not even counting all the stuff that they haven't shown us. But you think about the immersive cards, how good the cards look in the game. I mean, that is the highlight of the game, and they are really playing into that with those like immersion cards, or I forget what they exactly called them, but being able to like go into the card and view, you know, the background and having the full context of how these Pokemon may interact with one another. I think it's just genius, brilliant. And you have like kind of the lenticular effects that they put on some of the cards that just look amazing, that like should be in PTCG Live, right? Like, it doesn't seem like it'd be too hard to animate some of these cards in the way that they're doing, but in any case, I think there might be guardrails surrounding some of that stuff on PCG Live, but I digress. So with that, I do feel that this is just kind of the stepping stone, that they're going to see how everything goes. If they can release this successfully and this goes gangbusters, which we both think it will, then they start expanding that product out from there. Because what we've seen from from a maybe a maintenance level or a game design level, it doesn't seem like they're going to put a ton of effort into that. It doesn't seem like they're going to be, you know, cranking out cards and gameplay mechanics that are wholly unique or take a lot of planning. Again, just from what we've seen, it seems like a lot of like, okay, you know, you build up your mana so you can do some big attack and then that's kind of it, right? But I do feel like with this stepping stone, they're going to be continually improving and kind of working it farther and farther toward the full TCG experience.
Something that, you know, I kind of think of, because it's interesting, right? I mean, we've got these, just thinking about TCGs as a whole, right? And thinking about conceptually trading card games, tabletop gaming, and video gaming, right? We exist and live at a time where these worlds coexist, tabletop gaming and video gaming. They coexist. Tabletop gaming has been around for tens of thousands and thousands of years, you know. There have been games that people play on tables, right? And video gaming is a newer thing, you know. And there's no, like, hard guarantee that tabletop gaming will continue to exist for hundreds and thousands of years into the future. It could just be completely eclipsed by digital gaming, right? But right now we live in this time where there are both, and it's really fun. And I do think that there's something kind of very special about tabletop gaming, and I feel very passionate about that. And my hope is that tabletop gaming continues to exist and never leaves, because I think there's something very important about people getting together and playing games, tactile games in a physical space.
Sure.
And I'm very passionate about that. And that's something I will just, you know, defend that till I die. So, I will tend to, kind of be like, you know, video games, digitizing the TCG, don't really need to do that. It's not that important. Like, the TCG, like, I kind of get some of where I feel like the Pokemon Company Japan comes from, as far as like not caring whether or not they have a digital client for their game, because they kind of see it, the paper cards, right? It's what it's all about. That's where the heart of the game is in the paper cards, right? You lose something when you digitize it. I do get a bit of that. So, like, I kind of understand where that's coming from. I see, and the game is designed from its core to be a paper tabletop game. It's not thought to be an app from when the mechanics are being designed. It's not designed for computers or phones. It's designed for the tabletop. So even when you get into the nitty-gritty of like the paper, the cards, and like the game mechanics, they're all designed to be played on a tabletop. It is, I think, kind of like the dirty work of a programmer to have to take that game and just translate it to a digital space. Yeah. And is kind of monotonous, you know, dirty work.
No.
Let me finish my thought. So they have always kicked that responsibility over to the Pokemon Company International. If they want to one-to-one replicate our game, right, on, you know, basically a simulator, go ahead and do that. That's like busy work. You can't mess up the game because you're copying it one-to-one. You're not doing any of, we're not going to allow you to do any of the creative heavy lifting with the TCG. You know, sure. Like, if you just want to replicate it, be our guest, whatever. But this game, Pokemon TCG Pocket, I see that as not the busy work of replication. I see this.
I agree.
As a completely new experience, and I think that that Creatures, right, the company behind the development of TCG Pocket and the Pokemon trading card game, I think that they will treat it as such and not aim to just replicate the other game that they are making, but think of it as a new experience wholly. That's kind of, that's what I think that they're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you know, one of us is going to be right.
It's true.
So I guess we'll
maybe
just
wait. Maybe we're both a little right.
Maybe we'll just wait a decade and see. I mean, I just like, I can't, I mean, I just think about it and I'm like, man, the artwork of these cards is so beautiful. What if we just had these digital representations of every card that's ever been made and then we could also play with them in the way that they're intended to be played with? Right. So it's not a one-to-one replica like you're saying, like maybe we think of PTCG Live as being, but it's an enhancement of the game. Because imagine if you had the immersive full art cards in TCG Live or something like that. You know what I mean? Or if you had the effects on some of these cards, they look this beautiful. I mean, even that would be such an enhancement to being like, okay, do I play tabletop or do I play live? Like, there's reasons to play both in terms of the, you know, kind of beauty and the experience that you have. So it's a lot of fun. I'm really encouraged by what I saw from that trailer, and it's supposed to come out this year. So we're going to have, you know, more information like sooner rather than later, which is really exciting.
I agree.
So with that, let's move on to thanking our presenting sponsor of the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast, Manscaped. Manscaped is the premier men's grooming company. They have all of your needs, be it the Lawnmower 5.0, be it the ear and nose hair trimmer. Actually, just yesterday, my wife complimented me on not having any extra hair coming out of my ears. So that was a pretty big dub in the Crewall household. But they have a ton of products, and I know that you at home will love them. So Andrew, why don't you tell people listening where they can get a discount and how much that is?
Manscaped.com. Head over to manscaped.com for all of your men's grooming needs, be it underwear, trimmers of all sorts, shampoos, conditioners, deodorants, all of that. You can use code TAGTEAM at checkout to receive 20% off your order. That's right, 20% off, one-fifth of your total. Comped. Use code TAGTEAM, and you'll get free shipping.
Yeah, you can't balk at that offer. So head on over to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout, get that discount, get that free shipping, and get something really nice to make yourself looking and feeling your best. Thank you so much, Manscaped, for sponsoring the cast. So, with that said, let's move on to Utrecht. Netherlands had a special event this last week, and there were some very surprising storylines. I think the one that immediately comes to mind is Tord's crazy top four deck, but let's not eclipse that with the accomplishment of Owen Kammerman winning back-to-back major events. Of course, a couple weeks prior, won the Dortmund Regional Championships. Dortmund with his Baxcalibur Chen Pao deck, and Utrecht with the Fusion Strike Mew deck. So, kind of give me a rundown, Andrew, of the tournament and what you were surprised with.
Yeah. The special event in Utrecht had 860 players competing. There's no prize money on the line. It is a special event, but still a very large and, you know, very large event. And basically, special events are regional style events. I mean, so basically a regional championship. And you had Owen winning with a different deck. I mean, it's so impressive to be able to win two different major events in the same month. It's basically this same period of 30 days with two entirely different archetypes, the Chen Pao Baxcalibur that he won with in Dortmund, of course, taking down the Golden Go deck in the finals, and then even more surprising this time, Fusion Mew taking down the Roaring Moon EX deck in the finals. This event in Utrecht seemed like a return for Charizard of sorts, with three Charizard EX focused decks in the top eight. One, of course, with a little bit of an asterisk next to it, because it is Tord Reclev's top four deck, which features a 202 Charizard EX line that is the most prominent attacker in the deck. Almost every other card in the deck is a singleton. In fact, every other Pokemon, of which there are 22, is a singleton. And then as far as the trainer cards go, there are two Iono. Every other supporter card is a singleton. There are four Rare Candy, four Ultra Ball, four Battle VIP Pass, two Rod, and two Palpad. Everything else is a singleton. So it's basically like kind of a crazy toolbox deck. It's just got so many different one-offs. There's so many different possibilities, things you can pivot to. For example, there's a 1-1 Bibarel and a 101 Pidgeot EX. Yeah. Why choose? There's a 101 Inteleon, the quick shooting one. There's a Radiant Charizard. There's a 1-1 Rapid Strike Urshifu VMAX in here. Because why not?
Yes. I mean, it does
is really kind of, a fun deck.
It does kind of feel like he just dropped the binder. I mean, we talk about binder drop decks, and this is just takes that to a whole nother level. Now, one of the concepts that, you know, Tord brought out in this deck that I thought was genius and just makes a ton of sense is the Mawile plus Inteleon combo. I'm surprised that we had never really seen that, unless I'm kind of mistaking some result. But that's a really interesting concept. You can spread some damage around the board all while stalling up one of your opponent's Pokemon that can't move, something like a Radiant Greninja for most decks that they just can't attack with. So really interesting concept, and I know that won him a number of games. He posted about it on Twitter, and certainly hearing some of the scuttlebutt from the boots on the ground in Utrecht, that was a pretty, prevalent strategy throughout most of his rounds.
And this is, funny enough, I mean, this is Tord's definitive take on Charizard EX so far. This is the first time he has played Charizard EX to a major, and boy, do we have an interesting looking list. I mean, he has definitely been favoring Gardevoir EX just kind of generally in the last, year. Gardevoir EX is kind of the deck that, won him notoriety this year, especially with the second place world championship finish. Then, pivoting to Lost Zone Box a little bit this year as well, November, December. And that isn't really a big surprise considering he won Peoria last year with a Lost Zone Charizard deck. But then this Charizard deck just out of nowhere, and Tord gets a lot of praise. I mean, it's very much deserved. He is what I consider to be the best player in the world. But this particular accomplishment, funny enough, playing this deck to a top four finish at a special event. It's not even a regional. It's not a national. It's a special event. Playing this deck does more for me, for my respect for Tord and my, looking at him as like the best player. This performance with this deck does more for my respect for him than a regional win would. Because I think it's just such a unique and such a special deck, and to be able to just defy every deck building convention and just like, I played this deck a little bit on stream today, and good God, playing this thing over the course of two long days. Oh my God. He's on another level, man. He just is.
Yeah. I mean, I would say he's the modern GOAT. He's the modern GOAT.
Yeah.
There's, there's certainly debate as to who's the greatest player of all time, but that's a debate for a different podcast. But yeah, I got to agree with you, Andrew. This is some really wild stuff. I mean, you and I think the thing that is interesting for me is that if I were to see this list from anyone else, or if I just, someone was like, hey, what do you think about this list? And they sent me this. I would laugh. you know, frankly.
Yeah, right? I'd laugh at it.
I'd laugh, and I would say that, you know, we gotta...
Nah, bro.
Yeah, we gotta...
Cooked too hard, he burned the kitchen down.
Yeah, it's... I mean, but it's kind of interesting, though, because I do also tell a lot of the people that I coach, like, hey, you know, a lot of people have different deck-building philosophies. Like, I can only really give you advice. I'll never tell you what's good or bad. And, you know, you have to make that decision for yourself because there's just so many avenues that you can go in a Pokemon deck. But this is, like, just... It's beyond... it's beyond my comprehension. My tiny little brain is like, this will never work. And I guess ultimately it didn't, right? Like, he got to top four. He didn't win the tournament. You know, we're always looking for that tournament winning deck. You know, if we can bring it down to earth here a little bit, but, just, you know, kind of beyond my comprehension of deck building and just never something that, you know, we talk about monkeys on a typewriter. Could they ever come up with a deck like this? And I'm not even sure that they could.
I think, you know, for me, for me, it's less that the deck is a good broken deck and more that Tor just flexed how good he is at the game.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because you have like infinite lines.
It's not like
he
came up with a new meta deck.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There are infinite lines and infinite possibilities with the deck. It's less consistent than most decks, but there's a lot of comeback potential with it if you... thread the needle just so, and as someone who is able to probably catch a lot of opponents by surprise and thread the needle just so when he needed to, I think Tord was able to just kind of flex and just show how good he is at the game to be able to play such a pile of cards and do well with it. But I mean, Charizard EX did show up in other realms. We had a Snorlax Pidgeot deck that Tord was actually able to defeat in top 8, and then of course the champion himself, Owen Kamerman, taking down Tord in top 4 and then taking down Roaring Moon EX in his march to another major victory. I mean, you got to give it to Owen Kamerman. Owen Kamerman winning those two events, you know, back to back, just absolutely nasty and not easy to do. That should never be overlooked. I know we do a lot of talking about Tord, but huge congratulations to Owen Kamerman for that. That amazing finish.
Totally.
James Cox as well there with Gardevoir. James Cox has been doing a lot of streaming lately, so it is it's cool to see him kind of repping his Gardevoir deck. That dude loves Gardevoir, and he's been having some good finishes.
I would go so far to say he violently loves Gardevoir.
He is what?
He violently loves Gardevoir. You ever see him on stream like flipping through the deck? Man, I'm like, I feel bad for the cards, bro.
He violently loves
Gardevoir. It's just like the sifting through the deck and like moving things to the front and everything's really like jerky and herky, and oh man, it makes me anxious watching him. I played him one time and it was Peoria, Toronto, one of those two, and I'm like, bro, you're just working too hard. He was playing Gardevoir back then. I'm like, dude, just you can calm down a little bit, you're working way too hard over there.
Isn't Gardevoir always working too hard to win?
I tend to agree, yes.
So, where do you think Utrecht leaves us? I mean, I've got Vancouver coming up. Jesse just went to a cup this past weekend, and he was playing Chen Pao Baxcalibur. He won his local cup with Chen Pao Baxcalibur. I know he's kind of like Jesse really likes going out to locals and just stunting on everybody at locals. He's kind of a local,
he's a local Tord.
I don't know. Tord doesn't have as many locals wins as Jesse does, period. I'm serious. Jesse probably has the most League Cup wins out of anybody in the world. I'm serious. Like 20 plus player League Cups, Jesse Parker is probably the winningest in the world of 20 plus player League Cups. That man's unstoppable. You take him to a League Cup, he's coming out with the win.
That's not true, because I've definitely beat him multiple times. Like, I don't think he's ever beaten me in League Cups.
Well, he's got you in the numbers then. He just goes to all of them.
Well, no, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. He definitely has
and
me in
And he's
numbers.
Good at them.
Definitely.
Yes, and he's good at them. For some reason, he's unstoppable on locals, you know. He was kind enough. He was very, very sweet, actually, because he texted me. He was like, were you planning on going to any cups this weekend? I'm like, no, man. I'm like, no. like, you know, home. Me, you,
right.
Me, you know, sitting at home with my 160 championship points or whatever, like, no, I'm not going to Cups, bro. I'm just chilling. Like, he's like, him with his invite, he's like, yeah, man, I'm thinking about driving out to a Cup. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't grinching points from you if you were going to show up, you know, because he's already got his invite. I'm like, that's very thoughtful and sweet. I appreciate that, Jesse. But no, I'm going to be chilling at the crib, you know, that's just right. Hanging out.
That's right.
And sure enough, he goes and wins the Cup with Chen Pao. So, you know, where do you think that this kind of leaves us for Vancouver? I am gearing up for Vancouver and look to give this format a good last hurrah. So,
yeah. Well,
what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I do see Gardevoir still being a major threat. I know that it didn't put up any top eight numbers, but of course, James on the bubble and then a couple others in sniffing range, you know, of that top eight, another win or a tie there for a couple other players could have put them into the top eight. But yeah, Gardevoir still seems like a strong pick. Charizard, kind of a resurgence as you had talked about, but I don't see that as carrying over to our metagame here in the States. I do see Gardevoir and Giratina kind of being the two big ones, and then I still got to hand it to Roaring Moon. It was the most played deck in day one. I believe most played deck in day two. So it didn't, you know, convert any better. It stayed roughly the same percentage wise. But I see Roaring Moon as being kind of that third option of players. I think it still maintains just decent enough matchups across the board. It's fun to play, consistent, and still a good pick heading into Vancouver.
All right, so what's up with this? You were asking me what deck I was liking just a week or two ago, and I was, you know, looking at Golden Go, looking at Chen Pao's, looking at Roaring Moon, looking at Maridon, and you said, good, so long as it's not Mew VMAX, you and Jesse both. And then it wins Utrecht. What's up with that?
I don't know
it
how.
Could be well, the regional winning deck, bro.
Well, but you weren't gonna play Fusion.
But what if I did?
You weren't, and that's you were gonna play Double Turbo. You were not. Don't even try. Don't even hit me with that. What we had been seeing, what players have been playing in the States, was a lot of Giratina. A lot of Giratina were playing Spirit Tomb. So that to me is kind of the big. You slap a Spirit Tomb down, you slap a path down. You can maybe get through one of those. Really difficult to get through both, especially at those crucial turns where they're disrupting the hand. So I kind of viewed that as the, yeah, I'm not going to play Mew for that reason, like that archetype in particular. Now you also look at having, you know, Spirit Tomb in various other Lost Box decks. I think that's where it slots in pretty nicely. It just doesn't seem very favorable for it. And then Gardevoir is not a... I don't know. How do you feel about that matchup as a Mew player?
I mean, Double Turbo Mew is not good against Gardevoir.
Yeah, yeah. And just, that's kind of it, right? You have Gardevoir's resurgence, and I just never thought that was great for Mew, especially with the Mirage Step. When that hits, it makes it really tough to mount any sort of comeback.
Yeah, I mean, the Mew decks these days, you just can't tech for everything, right? Like, I do think that Mew Double Turbo Mew VMAX has a good... I think it has a good Charizard Pidgeot match.
I would agree. Sure.
I've caught some flack for that, but then I also called out chat and said, you know, which one of you could beat me with your Charizard deck? And I had someone volunteer as tribute, and I did beat them 2-1. So, I mean, that's anecdotal evidence, but I also have never lost to Charizard with Mew VMAX at a regional, and I've played against it over a handful of times. So, like, you know, I've lived it as well. I've never lost to Charizard with Mew VMAX. Now, I've lost Roaring Moon's bad, and that matchup's not great, but you know, but Charizard, Judge, Iono, Path, the Box of Disasters, you got enough going for you to win that matchup. It is, I think, the thing that deters me from wanting to play Mew the most is just the Giratina with the Tomb. I mean, I think that matchup is just so miserable that I've got no motivation to want to play Mew VMAX into, you know, Tina's with the Paths, the Tombs. It's just, it's
and we got, much. I mean, we got Tina players here. I mean, not to say that Europe doesn't, but We just got big Tina heads here, man, and I would just expect them all to play Spiritomb. You know, to be completely honest, I think that there's, you see Mew winning. You know, it's been kind of the trend here in the States, at least, for these Tina players to play the Spiritomb. Helps a lot in other matchups too. I mean, we talk about this a lot, the Charizard matchup, the Snorlax stall matchup, all those matchups that they're trying to utilize the Rotom, and then of course you have Roaring Moon trying to do the thing with the Moltres. So, you know, there's auxiliary uses, which is what you really want in the tech. So yeah, I see Spiritomb as being an inclusion in Giratina, and that would determine.
And then as the, you know, obviously as the Maridon regional champion, I have to ask you on your Maridon update, is it kind of fallen off here at the tail end of this format? Is it not? Yeah. Are the Maridon waters good, or are they too choppy?
It's really, really hit or miss. I think that on the whole, Maridon has worse matchup spread than Roaring Moon, which is why I've kind of pivoted to Roaring Moon as you know, my main deck right now. But it's very interesting because as irredeemable as the Charizard matchup is, you actually take some favorable matchups into things like Gardevoir and Lost Box decks. So it's very much like I view something like Roaring Moon having, you know, generally even the favorable matchups, whereas the Maridon deck is very polarized in its matchups. So if you hit the right day, it's going to be amazing for you. You're just going to roll through the tournament. You're going to feel like nothing can stop you because the deck has that inherent consistency behind it. But, you know, you hit one too many Charizard decks or, yeah, I don't even see, like, Roaring Moon is, you know, can go either way, but I see that as favoring Moon. Mew is kind of tough. So you need to hit like Lost Box, Guardi, and Chen Pao for really, yeah, you know,
be your other one.
Yeah, yeah. And then try to cheese some of those bad matchups to really have a shot. So, you know, again, very hit and miss. I don't think I would trust it with 15 rounds, try to win a tournament, but can't really fault you for it. I still think it's a fine deck. It's just very polarized in its matchups. Now you were kind of on Goldengo for a bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Goldengo is just a lot of fun. I really like
that. Andrew purchased his $9 Goldengos the other day.
I did, yes. And then quickly found out that his Tina matchup's just not great. You know, the paths are just, it's, Goldengo's better post-rotation. I don't feel bad for investing in them because, like, I just want to have that option for EYC if I decide to go that route. Goldengo certainly loves path being gone. But I think the deck is very fun, and something that I really liked about Goldengo is how aggressive you can be with the Gust, the Manaphy, Canceling Cologne, Radiant Greninja. I feel like it's very good at the Radiant Greninja play. Baxcalibur, obviously,
yeah,
you know, can make that play happen, but the Baxcalibur lists lately haven't been running the Canceling Cologne either.
Right.
Just because it's a little bit too much to ask with, right, like the rare candy and the cross switchers and everything else you got going on in the deck. But Goldengo doesn't have that much going on, so it can afford to play the Canceling Cologne. So I've really liked that about Goldengo, being able to just go aggro Palkia, cross switchers, Canceling Cologne, do whatever. That feels really good. And then using Goldengo is like your kind of late game sweeper is nice. I mean, it feels like a Palkia deck with the Goldengo package,
right,
which is pretty cool. And I've been enjoying that. I mean, it's like a fun, different deck to play. And funny enough, I find myself enjoying Chen Pao and Goldengo both similarly now. You know, they're both kind of like these big one-hit KO decks. It's really satisfying to just clear things off the board.
Yeah.
It's been a little while since I feel like I've been, you know, playing this style of deck with a superior energy retrieval in it. It kind of reminds me of the old days with Blastoise and Black Kyurem and all that. So it's been kind of fun to revisit that. But you know what's not fun? It's getting those superior energy retrievals discarded by Aerie. So,
man, yeah. I feel like we're just like busting at the seams wanting to talk about post-rotation. And we still have one tournament left in this pre-rotation format. But that is going to have to be saved for another episode. And that is not this one. So we thank you all so much for listening. If you want to get more involved with the podcast, you can head on over to X. We are at Real John Walter. That's my handle there. At Enjoy Friend for Andrew, and at Tag Team Pokemon for the podcast. Go over and follow those accounts. Thank you all so much for listening. Again, we're going to be doing our big kind of unpacking of the post-rotation metagame and our findings in this early, early metagame as it evolves next format. Next episode. Come on, it's late. Next episode, and so we can't wait to bring that to you next week.
Indeed, thank you all so much for listening. Y'all have a great week.
Peace.
See ya.